I love the sound of breaking glass. J'espère que vous êtes bien à notre écoute. Notre lunchtime en anglais continue avec la chronique Breaking Glass de Dennis Bro. I need the noises of destruction.
This is Bro on the Art World Beat, breaking glass in L.A. Class and culture in Los Angeles, fear and loathing in the city of the angels. Race is the way class is spoken in America, Cornel West wisely pointed out, and that is especially true in the sprawling multi-cities that comprise Los Angeles. Money is the other way the class is constituted, regulated, and enforced, and both are used to segregate this city of multiple contradictions and rigid, though often invisible, boundaries and barriers, barring one class from another. Language, living quarters, and mode of transport are some of the ways class structure is imposed, and this is visible in the architecture and layout of the city that was developed with no real center, but rather an endless sprawl that grew up wherever the next profitable real estate market appeared. As Mike Davis points out in what is still the best book on LA, City of Quartz, LA was the only major American city that lacked an industrial base, that is, a city mired in illusion and an illusory service and entertainment economy. Downtown LA did finally, by the 1940s, establish an industrial base, including becoming a textile center, but then Ronald Reagan stripped that base and promoted its migration to Asia in the neoliberal era of the 70s before becoming president and applying this principle to the country as a whole. Entire areas are continually remade as downtown, whose motto is now Live, Eat, Play in DTLA. Once the financial heart of the West became a ghost town by the end of the 50s and was then in the 60s and 70s inhabited by the Hispanic, particularly Mexican populations as Anglos fled to the suburbs. The area is being reclaimed, gentrified, as the sons and daughters of those who fled move back to this left for dead area and now become an art center, and begin ousting its Hispanic inhabitants as property values rise. This recolonization is marked by the transformation of what were once peasant markets into trendy shishi eateries serving the latest craze avocado toast, with names that transform ordinary breakfast into a rarefied and erotic meal, such as the currently wildly popular franchise Egg Slut. There are whole sections of the city, particularly in the mid-city and south-central areas, where Spanish is the dominant language, but those areas are among the city's poorest, with many of its homeowners struggling to survive by supplementing their day jobs by at night ferrying the city's upper-middle-class elite as Uber drivers. The poor ride buses, once referred to by the Anglo population as shame trains, but which today are being talked about as a source of public transportation, which may allow the city to cut down on its pollution. The boundaries between neighborhoods, enforced by real estate prices, are so rigid that a most common question is, where do you live? Since the answer will determine one's socioeconomic status. If there's an incongruity in the answer, i.e., the person seems to be, for example, a bohemian living in a rich district, the second question to determine status is, what do you drive? Nevertheless, this is a city of contradictions with its class structure embedded in its cultural life and marked by contrast in its approach to monuments, museums, sports centers, and even its symphony. This is starkly evident in two murals in the Olvera Street section of the city, itself a kind of tourist and cleansed celebration of the Mexican population, complete with a clothing and trinket market and authentic restaurants. At the top and heart of the street is a mural depicting the mission view of Hispanic culture, with the Padre blessing the animals, a feast traditionally celebrated on the street, while the colorfully garbed Mexican peasants in a depiction that resembles a Disney animation, kneeling in humble adoration of the benevolent Anglo preacher. This view of California spiritually sustaining its Hispanic population is undercut, however, by a nearby mural titled America Tropical, painted in 1932 by the famous Mexican muralist David Alfaro Siqueiros. The mural deploys a triptych construction within the same frame to show at the center, in traditional religious iconography, the place for Mary, God the Father, or Jesus, a Mexican worker crucified, with the American eagle perched above him, haughty and oblivious to his suffering. To the right are two armed Mexican peasants readying themselves to fire on the conqueror, and to the left is a mass of tangled industrial pipes that resemble tree trunks and that represent the transformation of a natural space into a for-profit capitalized space. This mural, after its opening, was quickly painted over, particularly the section with the armed Mexican peasants, and Siqueiros was deported. The mural, a more accurate depiction of the Mexican struggle in the U.S., was somewhat restored by the Getty Foundation, but can now only be seen from the roof of a museum dedicated to its origin, with the colors now washed out, unlike the perpetually bright colors of the far more visible Mission mural with its docile peasants. The striking aspect of museum life in LA is that of the four major museums, the Getty, Los Angeles County Museum of Art, or LACMA, UCLA's Hammer, and the Broad, three are private, with the Getty collection far outweighing the public LACMA offerings. Both feature a kind of Noah's Ark approach to art history, that is, one of each kind of major painters and movements, but the Getty is a more supercharged turbo Mercedes Ark, featuring three or four of each kind, compared to LACMA's public, more impoverished Toyota, with barely one of each. Plans to construct a museum quarter around LACMA have been criticized because due to the dominance of car culture, there's no safe place to cross the street for access to the multiple museums. Museum culture also raises the idea central to the city of illusion. The Getty Villa this summer is displaying articles from the city of Herculaneum, on loan because the villa is a reconstruction of the city near Pompeii, leveled by this Vesuvius volcano in 79 AD. The striking aspect of this recreation is that the oil magnate Getty, once the richest man in the world, had the money to rebuild the Roman city, so that his vision of the city is now more lifelike than what one sees in visiting the actual ruins outside of Naples. Equally, downtown LA is filled with abandoned once palatial movie theaters that are now only rented out for occasions such as Oscar parties, while one former restaurant functions only as a rentable site for which Hollywood period restaurant scenes are staged. This all pales behind the Grove in West LA near Beverly Hills, an artificial neighborhood that boasts high-end products anchored by the Apple Store, while in its false recreation of neighborhood, complete with trolley, recollects in tranquility quaint non-virtual ways of being, such as pedestrian blocks, a former sign of working class solidarity, and their artifacts, newsstands, movie theaters, and the most vanishing breed, destroyed by Amazon, bookstores. Most touching in terms of monuments is a simple obelisk at the corner of Lincoln and Venice, marking the site where Japanese Americans were herded into transports, taking them to concentration camps at the onset of World War II. The purpose of the plaque is to preserve the memory of this painful incident so that it will not happen again, even as a former camp at Fort Sill, Oklahoma, is now being used as a detention center, i.e. concentration camp, for immigrant infants separated from their parents. More prominent than museum culture in LA is sports stadium culture, with the baseball team, the LA Dodgers, having one of their finest seasons where a number of games, like a YouTube broadcast of a midday game, as baseball itself goes virtual against the St. Louis Cardinals, which the Dodgers won thrillingly in the last out. Here, too, the spectacle itself, a palliative in a city awaiting, as is the rest of the U.S., a threatening recession, is always mixed with commercial gain. When the organist played the traditional baseball theme, Take Me Out to the Ball Game, the neon streamers displayed all of the various Coke products, so that Coke supplanted the song's more ancient Buy Me Some Peanuts and Cracker Jacks. Stadium building, with its subsequent displacement of often poorer populations in the surrounding area, is accelerating, especially in Inglewood, soon to be the site of the football Rams Stadium housing 70,000 and the basketball Clippers Arena. There's a section of Inglewood known as the Black Beverly Hills, home in former times to musical luminaries Ray Charles and Tina Turner, which now may be on the stadium chopping block as LA also gears up for the 2028 Olympics. The creation of Dodger Stadium was the initial massive stadium land grab in the heart of the Chavez Ravine Latino or Latina community, which in the 50s was constantly expanding, but which needed additional housing, proposed by the mayor, which was red-baited at the time and declared an un-American socialist solution. This massive undevelopment allowed the Dodgers and the city to claim the land. Inside the stadium are photos of the bulldozed and leveled land, portrayed as barren and remade as the site of a majestic ballpark. In the combination of Dodger Stadium and the remake of remaking of downtown LA's Bunker Hill into a corporate site now overlooking or looking down on the city, over 12,000 residents lost their homes. To end, though, on a note of resilience, this summer also saw the continuation of the Youth Orchestra of LA, YOLA, a tradition headed by LA Symphony conductor Gustavo Dudamel, celebrating his 10th year as head of the orchestra. The tradition, in a line in the U.S. with the Leonard Bernstein's Young People's Concerts, but inflected with Dudamel's experience with his Bolivarian Young People's Orchestra in Venezuela, reaches out to poor and minority communities across the country to fashion a high school orchestra of the highest caliber, which then holds a final concert, in part conducted by Dudamel. The passionate conductor began the night by his simple, "I am from a country called Venezuela," a statement which, with him surrounded by this diverse young orchestra brimming with talent, zest, and confidence, was a powerful and understated way of contradicting current U.S. propaganda waged in its quest to short-circuit oil competitor Venezuela and steal its assets. The concert included an Asian and African-American conductor, Suhan and Roderick Cox, preceding Dudamel, an orchestral number conducted by Dudamel, which featured Venezuelan folk musicians backed by the orchestra, and a repertory boasting the contributions of early African-American symphonic pioneers William Grant and Florence Price, as well as illustrating the way the classical canon is partially made up of contributions from minority groups, such that Brahms' Hungarian Dance No. 5, the concluding number, is largely drawn from Roma or Gypsy music. It was here, in this touching melding of so many culturally disparate spirits, that the true nature of an evolving Los Angeles, one that largely must counter its history, took shape and form. This is Bro on the Art World Beat, signing off. Oh, change of mind,
something breaking glass. Dennis Bro is the author of Film Noir, American Workers and Postwar Hollywood, Class Crime and International Film Noir, and Maverick or How the West Was Lost. His current book, to be published in 2018, is Hyper-Industrialism and Television Seriality, The End of Leisure and the Birth of the Binge. C'était Breaking Glass de Dennis Bro sur Art District. Très bonne suite de nos programmes, jazzistique et artistique, à notre écoute.